T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
As we talk a little bit of college basketball, and we have been doing so for most of yesterday and through today, continuing to do that, there was a terrific interview yesterday on these airwaves that Dan McNeil and Danny Parkins did with probably the foremost college basketball analyst today. I think he's certainly worked his way into dean status.
There are a couple in and around his class, but yeah, Jay Billis is up there.
So Jay Billis joined the New Score afternoon show, and I thought you'd get a kick out of some of this stuff because he was asking you, can you believe all this craziness? Did you see any of this coming?
Well, I know. I mean, otherwise I would have put everything in my bracket, but you don't see it coming in any year. And, you know, it was an interesting and really fun weekend. I think it's funny, though, what we tend to do. I don't know why we do this, but instead of just sitting back and enjoying it, we use words like unprecedented. And with the exception of one or two things that happened, none of it was unprecedented. Not only had it all happened before, but it's happened in greater measure. The only thing that was unprecedented about this weekend, the first weekend of the tournament, was the fact that we had a 16 beating a 1 for the first time on the men's side. And we had, in the South region, the top 4 seeds all fell before the Sweet 16. We've had the top 3 seeds in regions fall. Heck, we've had it in the same tournament where the top 3 seeds in 2 different regions fell before the Sweet 16, and the top seed was a 4. But we've never had the top 4 seeds fall in one region. But outside of that, that's really the only thing that was any different about this tournament. And in fact, the things that we're celebrating as chaotic, we've actually had way more chaos in past years.
Really?
And just for example, we had 2 double-digit seeds that made it through the Sweet 16, Loyola and Syracuse. And to many people, that was chaos. We've had 3 that have made it before. Can you take a guess at how many times it's happened?
I guess based on how you're describing this, a handful?
13.
Wow. Okay, even more than I thought.
And we had 1 year where 4 double-digit Cs made it through the Sweet 16, and in 1999, back before the one-and-done era, because we like to blame everything on one-and-done, but in 1999, 5 double-digit Cs made it to the Sweet 16. And so it's really interesting to say unprecedented, and it makes it sound like, wow, it's never been this chaotic, but it's not true. And while, you know, I mean, this has been great, but it's happened before. And while we're saying, like, folks like to say, well, one and done, that's why we have all this parity. Well, look, if we have parity now, that means we've always had it, because it's been more chaotic in past years. But when people say one and done is responsible for this, does it occur to anybody that the 2 teams most associated with one and done are still playing?
Of course.
I mean, Kentucky and Duke are still playing.
Yep.
So who are these one and done programs that are so harmed by early, you know, people leaving early? The teams that have gotten knocked out have been the older teams. The younger ones are still there. So
people would probably argue Arizona, right, this year?
Arizona has 1 1 and done. All their other guys are juniors and seniors.
Like, right, with DeAndre Ayton.
They're more experienced than the Lakers.
Jay, did you ever think you'd live to see a 16 beat a 1?
No, I didn't think it would happen, but it happened in a way that you figured it had to happen. The 1 was awful. I mean, just absolutely awful. That was by far the worst game that Virginia played all year, and UMBC played well. But I think you saw the next game when Kansas State, who's very average, I mean, Kansas State's just an average, decent team, shut them down completely. And Kansas State cannot score and still won. So, you know, in a game where you know, nobody could make any shots, you know, Kansas State was still able to win. Kansas State was playing without its leading scorer and still won. So, you know, it was a perfect storm for the lower-seeded team to win, and they couldn't do it.
We're talking to Jay Billis here on The Score. Do you disagree then with the notion that the gap is narrowing between the top seeds and the lower seeds?
Well, how could it be narrowing when we've had this stuff before? I mean, you know, in 1986, I was a senior in college in 1986. Nobody had heard of people leaving early. Somebody leaving early back then was a hardship case where a junior left. You know, like James Worthy left after his junior year. Michael Jordan left after his junior year. Patrick Ewing stayed 4 years. Ralph Sampson stayed 4 years. You know, guys like that. Clyde Drexler stayed 4 years. You name it. There were very few that ever left. And in 1986, you had a 14, a 12, and an 11 make it through to the Sweet 16. And the seed total, if you added up all the total seed numbers in 1986, the seed total was 89. You know what it is this year?
I don't.
85. The narrative doesn't go with the facts. We've had this forever. And you know, so you it's just sports. That's the way sports are. And it's great. Like, I don't know why we have to say, you know, like Texas A&M beat North Carolina. North Carolina came off of a national championship. In the years that they've come off a national championship, they've been out in the second round every year. And you know, so is that some crazy thing that happened to them this year? And earlier in the year, Texas A&M was a top five team. And the reason they didn't stay up there was because they had a few injuries and they had a bunch of suspensions. You know, players got suspended for off-court behavior. They're all back now. And so it's a totally different, you know, totally different deal. You know, so you have some of those things that have happened, but it's basically it's just basketball that's happened forever, and I don't think it's going to change. So, you know what the craziest year we've ever had was 2008 when all four number one seeds made it to the Final Four. We've never had that before. That's the only year ever that's happened. That was crazy. This isn't as crazy.
Here in Chicago, as you might guess, everybody's jumping about Loyola. Nevada's next up for them. If they get by Nevada, it's Kentucky. Let's start with their first task. What do you think the keys are?
Well, you got to guard a really good offensive team. And, you know, here's another narrative busted for you. People say that, oh, all these transfers are killing the mid-majors. They're actually not. Transfers are helping mid-majors because there are more down transfers, if you want to refer it that way, where high major players are going to mid-majors and making them better than there are up transfers where, you know, players are leaving a mid-major and going to a major institution. So you've got a bunch of major college players on the Nevada team. So it's really not going to look that much different if they had, if Loyola played Purdue or something. Kendall Stevens transferred in from Purdue. He's made 100 some threes on the season, one of the best shooters in the country. Caleb Martin, who's second in the Mountain West in scoring, just about 20 a game, and his brother Cody Martin. Both those guys transferred in from NC State. And there's a kid named Jordan Caroline there who's I think he's a junior or senior now. I can't remember which, but he's an older player, and he's been one of the most productive players in the Mountain West for 3 years now. And really good rebounder, tough kid. They're not great defensively, and they lost their point guard about a month ago. Lindsey Drew tore an Achilles, so that they're without a point guard. Cody Martin's been playing it and doing a good job. They can really score. They're not great defensively, so I think that gives Loyola a chance to score, and you guys have seen Loyola. They're very good offensively, but they're going to have to do a really good job on defense to be able to stop Nevada, because they can really put points on the board, as evidenced by what they did to a good defensive team in Cincinnati.
You mentioned Loyola. What is it about them that you see that makes their offense so effective?
Well, they've got two players that are really legit. You can play just about anywhere. Clayton Custer can play anywhere. He's a really good scorer. Dante Ingram can play anywhere. Those guys are really good players, and they're well coached. Porter Moser does a really good job. They play a pack line defense, so and they're on a high. They've been rolling. I don't think they've lost since January. They played really, really well. But, I mean, you know, just to show how difficult it can be or fragile, if you want to put it that way, I mean, they've scored in the low 60s in both games and had to hit game-winning shots in both games. You know, if that one shot that they hit in the last game that hit the rim and bounced straight up, if that thing bounces to the side a little bit, they lose. And so the margin's not been real big in either one of these games. I think when they beat Miami and then their last game, But they're really good and really capable. You could say the same thing about Nevada. You know, Nevada was down 22. That could have been the end of it for them, and Loyola would be playing Cincinnati, and people would be talking about 1963. But as long as Sister Jean, you know, stays in good form, you know, you got to feel good for him. I don't know, but Sister Jean clearly wasn't a believer. She had him going out for Sweet 16.
Yeah, she gambles with her head over her heart. That was very disappointing to me, Jay.
Yeah, can you believe it? I mean, clearly God is not a basketball fan, because otherwise she'd have it all set up.
Yeah, can we agree that Sister Jean, 98 years old, that's unprecedented in college basketball? Can we agree with that?
No, we've had some 99-year-olds that have done a heck of a job for teams. You guys, you know, again, with your narrative, wanting to say that it's never happened before. Been a couple 100-year-olds, and, you know, I hate to break it to you, but Sister Jean's a spring chicken compared to some of the folks that have been on the sidelines before.
Blame it on my generation. Us millennials, we're prisoners of the moment, Jay. That's all we are. We're
exactly. You got to know your history.
All right, well, Syracuse and Duke, a couple of 2-3 zone teams, right? Just a classic matchup there.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things where the two teams that I mentioned before that got the luckiest in their bracket as far as their path is concerned, Duke having Michigan State out of there and getting Syracuse, and somebody they know and somebody they played against before, and then Kentucky with the break they got in their bracket. I mean, Kentucky may not have to play a single-digit seed to get to the or they'll play one. They'll play Kansas State, which is a 9. But that was an extraordinary happening for them. But, you know, Duke, I don't think Syracuse is going to be able to beat Duke. You know, we'll see. The only thing working in Syracuse's favor, in my judgment, is that with Duke playing zone now, it reduces the amount of possessions in a game, and fewer possessions in the game favors Syracuse, or at least makes it more likely that they'd be able to do something. But I don't think they have the firepower. There's no way they're going to score in the mid-50s and beat Duke. You're going to have to score up in the 60s or low 70s.
Jay Billis, from yesterday.
Yesterday.
On the Scores Afternoon Show.
From yesterday.
The reason I'm laughing is because a texter from the 224, wherever the 224 is, this texter said, "This guy is scripted. Word for word said the same thing on the afternoon show yesterday."
Those ESPNers and their agendas.
Amazing.
Just spewing the same stuff day after day.
He's not wrong. The texter is not wrong. I don't know what the script did, but yes, word for word said the same thing. I thought it was a terrific interview.
It was.
And it kept me in my car. It's that moment where you're in the garage and you're waiting and, you know, you just bought a frozen pizza and you're thinking, if I sit here longer, the pizza might start to thaw. And then
you lose integrity
exactly,
on the crust.
Exactly. And
I cannot lose crust integrity.
I worry about that, whether it's one of the Geno's East deep dish spinach stuffed pizzas or
that's the go-to for you?
It's the only time I really eat deep dish pizza is that it's like $5 sometimes. It's one of the great steals.
You let price mitigate deep dish pizza.
Listen, it's one of the market inefficiencies currently in Chicago.
Okay.
Is the $5 or $6, depending. Sometimes it's as low as $5 for 2 pounds of a deep dish pizza. Not to mention we've got like a Jack Sprat thing going on where my wife just wants the crust.
I'm just not much of a cornmeal crust guy.
Okay, I understand that.
Yeah, no, it is.
The other thing, I bought one yesterday because the Tombstone Pizza was 3 for $10.
Yeah, I'm a Jack's guy. Okay, if I'm gonna go frozen pizza,
you're a Wisconsin guy, and you're not a Tombstone guy.
I overloaded. That's all my childhood was a bunch of Tombstone pizzas, and now it's too much. Really? I got to go Jack's.
So you had a great childhood. Got it.
Yeah, right. No, it wasn't bad. I'm not saying it was bad.
I thought that was Wisconsin.
It absolutely is. All my friends' dads, they all worked for Tombstones or cheese operations that sold cheese to Tombstones, or Casey Johnson, who sold the napkins to clean up after the pizzas and the cheese. That's everybody.
Okay, because for me, growing up as a little kid, when mm-hmm. your cabin had a pizza party up in Hayward at overnight camp, and they would wake you up in the middle of the night.
Tombstone.
It was Tombstone pizzas they'd pick up over at Dixie's or the Wheel Inn, and it's also probably why one of my first tastes of beer was Leinenkugel back when that was the only place you could get it. You couldn't get...
No, you can't. Only in Chip Falls or up northern Wisconsin.
And people, when parents would come up for visiting weekend, they would come back with cases of Leinenkugel.
Yeah, that's what they do with New Glarus now, bringing it across state lines.
Well, the spotted cow is a thing.
It's a good beer. The fat squirrel is pretty good, too. I could go down the list.
This segment was brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. So that was Jay Billis, and we've got some information about... the coach of Loyola's
your guy.
Opponent. Yeah, my guy.
Your guy, Eric Musselman.
He is one interesting dude.
He really is. He has been the subject of memes. He has been uncensored on national television. He has gotten clear of the FCC with some of his comments afterward. And I
what
found...
Gay man.
Yep, that guy. Eric, back off.
Yeah, there's apparently some issues with in-game hydration and some worries and some you've got
since you go back with Eric Musselman, I've found somewhat of a history of his behaviors, and I thought maybe we'd check some of this out with you and see if it jives with the prior past.
All right, we'll do that coming up next. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
No.
Ed.
No, oh, that's Eric.
Hello, Ed.
Look, Eric Musselman was a head coach at a very, very young age, a pro head coach in the Continental Basketball Association. His father, of course, is Bill Musselman, who was the famed University of Minnesota head coach, famed for his pugnacious ways and toughness. He was the head coach of the expansion Minnesota Timberwolves. He was Tom Thibodeau before Tom Thibodeau. If you know why Thibodeau is the way he is because he learned at the hand of Bill Musselman. Now, Eric is different kind of personality, but his whole thing in the minor leagues was constantly churning his roster because you always had to have your roster was never set. You'd wake up in the morning and a guy just calls you or an agent calls you and said he left to play in the Philippines. He left to play in Venezuela. He got called up to a 10-day NBA contract. So Eric always, this is before cell phones.
And he's in his late 20s at this point, right?
Yes, he was in his 20s. We're talking, you know, I first crossed paths with him in 92, 93. And so do the math. I think he's 2 years older than I
can't.
So he was, he was in his 20s and in full command of one of the best teams in the league. I mean, really, really a tremendous coach. He had this guy, Chico Averbuch, that would his personnel guy was always on the phone. And he'd come in for shoot around and there'd be like a desk phone on press row and he'd pick it up and he'd be calling somebody in another country to find a player who he might get on his roster. And he'd mess around with all the extra roster spots that they had at the fake injured reserve stuff. We always would joke that even if it looked like they lost a guy, there'd be some former NBA player that would just show up and play for the Rapid City Thrillers at the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center there in Rapid City, South Dakota. And he walks in and I was going to go say hello to him. I was going to shoot around just sort of protocol as a PR director. I'd go make sure everything's all right, walk over to the arena and he's screaming at somebody about something. And the guy goes, it's a phone call for you. It's Jeff Webster's agent. I don't want to talk to Jeff Webster's agent. He goes, he really wants to talk to you. He goes, you tell him if his client doesn't want to sit at the end of the effing bench and wave an effing towel, I'm going to trade his ass to Fargo. And I'm like, wait. You're already in South Dakota. The whole trade him to Fargo.
Right,
exactly. Like, that's not really that big a deal, man, you know? But it was always like that. Always on, always 100% intensity all the time.
So did he have his shirt on during that whole exchange? That's my big question.
Yeah, the shirt thing is...
Because I knew a little bit about Eric Musselman leading into this tournament. I didn't know a whole lot. And he certainly introduced himself to the country in a way that I didn't expect him to. I was of the opinion, I thought, that he was a little bit like a, you know how like toddlers get overwhelmed with emotion and anxiety and the shirt comes off?
Yeah, overstimulated.
I can't handle what's going on and the shirt has to come off. I don't know what, it's too much.
Right. Yeah.
And then you take your shirt. I thought Musselman was kind of in that vein, you know, just kind of wandering into the locker room and couldn't take it anymore. And the shirt had to come off. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
Turns out, no. Found a little bit of a history of Eric Musselman in no less a liberal rag than the Washington Post. So perhaps it's fake news, but I don't know. Here's just pieces and parts of it. 2 years ago, you surely remember, if you worked for the CBI tournament, Musselman celebrated a CBI title over Morehead State with his midriff fully exposed. The quote from Musselman. First year I was at Nevada, we won a CBI championship. I was taking my dress shirt off to put on my championship t-shirt. The guys grabbed me and picked me up. I was midstream getting the t-shirt on, and then it just became kind of a tradition. Nevada won the Mountain West regular season title this year, and in the Sparks Tribune, it was described like this. After inheriting a program that won just 9 total games 2 years ago, Musselman ripped his shirt off Saturday night, waving into the air while getting showered by silver and blue confetti. So now it's kind of a thing now, and it reminds you of maybe a scene in, I don't know, Showgirls or something like that.
I'd say Magic Mike, maybe.
Yeah, we're getting a little tippy here. So last month, Musselman awarded a scholarship to fan favorite Charlie Tooley, right? And I don't know where you land on this, but whenever college football coaches do this or basketball coaches do this, I am a sucker for the big role of a college scholar. Like, the kid's a walk-on. He's just trying to get there, and now hey, we got you a scholarship, and here comes, you know, whatever. And I'm a sucker for it. Yeah. I'll watch it 7 or 8 times. Gets real dusty in the room. Mm-hmm. I kind of clear that out of the way, and everything's fine. So apparently Tooley, when he was getting a scholarship, Musselman has, you know, they're doing the first drill of practice. Tooley dives for a loose ball. He gets the ball back, looks at Musselman, you know, for some, like, you know, attaboy or something like that. The coach, Musselman, rips his shirt off, and he's got the scholarship offer for Tooley taped to his chest.
That's just stupid.
And I just thought, you know, as much as I get emotional about kids getting scholarships and just, you know, walk-ons
making it there. I don't want that
it's
one.
It's all soggy.
I want a different scholarship.
Trying to sign the thing and right. The pen's just ripping through the paper. You can't do it anymore.
Which Simpsons episode was it where Flanders was, or is it an
shirtless?
The running joke where a shirtless Flanders, he's like built like an Adonis and stupid sexy Flanders.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's only the half of it with Eric Musselman, by the way, because I'm glad Deadspin picked this up.
What's taped on the back half of Eric Musselman?
No, it was if you've been watching him, he's constantly taking sips out of a cup, and the cup had a top on it, so I didn't know if it was coffee,
sippy cup,
it was water. Yes, it looked like the adult.
Does he drink with two hands as well, just to make sure he doesn't spill anything?
A question was asked of him after practice. It said, "Coach, you've got to be one of the most hydrated coaches on the sideline. You always have a cup of water or something in your hand going up and down. The question is, have you ever had to use the restroom while coaching a basketball game or seriously thought about leaving?"
All right, so funny question posed to coach. Looking for a quote.
Here's his answer.
All right.
Yes and yes and yes.
All right.
They're small sips that I'm taking. As you get older, you've got to use the bathroom a little bit more. And so I do worry, especially when the timeouts are longer in this tournament. It's been a great concern of mine.
Not just a passing concern.
No, just not like, oh, now that
this is something that wakes him in the middle of the night, much like his need to go to the bathroom. This also keeps him up at night.
Now, wait. Now you've got a philosophical question here.
Spending time up at night needing to go, thinking about needing to go in the tournament.
If one's worry about needing to go, having one awake at night as much as the actual need to go,
right. Therefore I go.
So he describes it. He says, "It's been a great concern of mine. Our staff's well prepared in case I have to leave."
Come on.
"So far, so good, though.
There's a contingency plan for if coach has to go tinkle."
Or, I don't know. I don't want to know the plan. I don't want to know the specifics of the plan because it could be an NFL-style plan.
I want there to be a code word. Someone has to shout on the sidelines.
A safe word of some kind.
Right.
And off he goes. Well, look, you see, guys, it happened before famously with Moses Malone when he left during a game.
That's right.
Moses, what happened? Where'd you? Ain't no thing. Got a dump. Like, okay.
Thank you, Moses.
Yeah, I'm glad I asked. Moses sounds good. But he's interesting guy. And he has had a quite the journeyman's basketball career. He's actually still serving an NBA exile.
Yes, he is.
He has been the head coach of the Warriors. He was the head coach of the Sacramento Kings. And long believed to be a guy who was going to be in the NBA forever. But then I think he had a pretty bad DUI.
Yeah. If I'm reading through some of this stuff and some of the thing in the Washington Post, that's what it was.
Wasn't it like going like the wrong way?
Yeah. Yeah. It was against traffic.
Yeah. It wasn't good.
Not that there's a good one.
Right.
It wasn't so bad. No, there's not one of those, but this was egregious.
Can you imagine that guy drunk if he's like this sober?
Yeah.
It's well,
he actually wears all of his clothes.
Sometimes
parkas, and
you know, you need to get out of your own head a little bit, I guess. So when we come back, we're going to actually talk NBA with an NBA voice, a very sui generis NBA voice. When you hear Brian Geltzeiler, you know you're hearing Brian Geltzeiler, and he is going to talk to us about the NBA. We're continuing to talk basketball, and Bernstein and McKnight, keep it here. You got the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
With full capabilities, I guess straight meditate like a Buddhist. That was some stuff last night. This segment brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for all your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies. Brian Geltzeiler is on Twitter at HoopsCritic. You hear him on SiriusXM. You see him on NBA TV. And this is an interesting time for the league, Brian, because so many eyes are on college basketball right now, maybe looking for some of the next wave of NBA players. We're in that what I like to think of is that end of March pre-NBA playoff lull when some teams are jockeying for position and most of us are just are gathering for what's going to be the real NBA stuff when the games start to matter.
Yeah, I think in a lot of years I would agree with it being a lull. I don't necessarily think it's a lull right now. And yes, the NCAA tournament, certainly the first weekend, has taken center stage. But let's be honest, guys. You got a lot of teams in playing in the Sweet 16 next weekend and going into the Elite Eight who people have no idea who these teams are and who any of the players are on these teams. So there is certainly a possibility here with the NCAA tournament that some interest drops off here. And right now in the NBA, when you look at the races for seeding and the races to get into the playoffs in the Western Conference in particular and the amount of good teams that you have there, night in and night out, there are compelling games, really compelling games. I mean, you think about it this way. We had a game last night where the Golden State Warriors didn't have their top three stars and their fourth star played about 12 minutes. They lost to the San Antonio Spurs, who very well could get Kawhi Leonard back soon. The San Antonio Spurs right now are one game in a loss column out of the 8 seed and tied in the loss column for the 7 seed. You get the Warriors potentially facing a Spurs team with Kawhi Leonard on it in the first round of the playoffs. My point is this. What you have going on right now in the NBA, in its own way, is incredibly compelling. And yes, we are at that time on the calendar where the tournament takes center stage. But some of this parity in the tournament, my opinion, waters it down a little bit from a fan interest standpoint. And the NBA, as it has been in recent years, is well positioned to maybe take a few eyeballs away from that.
Brian, you mentioned on Twitter a little bit earlier this morning just about the, we've lost some big time talent out of the tournament. A lot of the top draft picks have been booted, but you said that 5 of the 6 first projected picks are big men, and obviously we've seen the role of a center in the NBA change quite a bit. Is there talent enough in that projected first 5 or 6 big guy wise to change again how that center works, or not so much?
I don't know if it's going to change how the center works, but it's going to take a flush position and make it a lot more flush. I mean, you look at teams right now, you can count on one hand the amount of teams that actually need a center. And when you start to run down some of the names, it's a little bit crazy how good some of these names are. I mean, listen, Raptors have 2 with Valanciunas and Poeltl. The Pacers have 2 with Turner and Sabonis. You know, it's obviously the Sixers with Embiid. You can keep going, the Heat with Whiteside. You know, the Bucks are one of the few teams that needs one. Look in the West. I mean, between Capella, between Nurkic and Zach Collins there, another good young player. Steven Adams with the Thunder. I mean, you can keep going. The Jazz with Gobert. The Pelicans have 2. The Timberwolves with Towns. The Clippers with Jordan. The Nuggets with Jokic. It is crazy the amount of talent you have at the position, and the rich is only going to get richer. Now, how is that going to have a big effect on what happens this summer? Well, here's the deal. You got teams that are looking to trade centers. The Heat are going to try to trade Hassan Whiteside. The reality is there's not going to be the kind of market for Hassan Whiteside that you think. DeAndre Jordan's going to be a free agent. He's going to be looking for a mega deal. Well, does he get a mega deal out there? If you're a team that potentially can trade for a guy that maybe is a little bit cheaper or be in a spot where you can draft a decent center, do you want to make that deal? Does that put you over the hump? It's a flush market for centers right now. It really is. And I think, in over where you guys are in Chicago, it affects the Bulls in this way. They made a decision to hold Robin Lopez office or the trade deadline because they weren't happy with the offers that they're going to get, thinking it could be better this summer. When you look at now the league, five of the top six players that are projected in ESPN's Jonathan Givony's mock draft, and he's the best going at this stuff, are big guys. Is there going to be that kind of market for Robin Lopez out there? I don't know. So it's a very interesting scenario in what's going to happen at that center position here as we come into the draft and into free agency.
Earlier in the show, we were talking a bit about Ty Lue and the pressure that he's feeling and what's going on with the Eastern Conference. I really wasn't sure when the Cavs decided to remodel on the fly what that would do for their current championship expectations. You know, on one hand, you say any team with LeBron James still close enough to his prime years, and he's proving that we may be redefining what those are with his quality of play, that of course they are considered a championship contender. But the Cavaliers sit third and well behind the Raptors and Celtics. A lot of people might not realize the Pacers have played their way up to a record of 41-30. And then it's the Wizards, the Sixers, the Heat, and the Bucks. And that's what the playoffs are going to look like now, because it doesn't seem like the Pistons are in any position to make a move. The field looks set with some jockeying around within those spots. But do you have a clear-cut favorite in the East at the moment?
I do, the Toronto Raptors. It's very, very simple. If you've been watching the Raptors all year, you're seeing a different team play out there in terms of style of play than we've seen any other year. You know, you got to remember one thing, guys. Money matters to players. Money matters a ton to players. Kyle Lowry came off two contracts, his last two deals, that ended up very quickly being big-time value deals for the teams that signed him to him. One was with Houston, and this last one was with Toronto, a four-year, $48 million deal that got priced out after the first year he signed that deal. Kyle Lowry was out there the last couple of years playing for a contract. He is their point guard. If you look at what happened to him this year, his numbers have definitely dropped off a little bit, except for one thing. He's bought into Dwayne Casey's whole mantra of playing a much more unselfish game revolving around ball movement. He's allowed his stats to drop. Why has he allowed his stats to drop for the good of the team? Because he just signed a contract for 3 years and $90 million, and he's finally getting that mega deal that he's wanted for all these years. It matters, and this team is playing differently, and Lowry's sacrifices have helped enable DeRozan to rise his game to a star level. I mean, listen, we talk all the time about the MVP conversation. The MVP conversation has two guys in it, Harden and James. But if you look one step below, you can easily put DeMar DeRozan there. The Raptors are versatile.
With Anthony Davis. Yeah, you better have AD in that second tier, too.
Of course AD's in that second tier. There's no doubt, but he's in the second tier. My point is, it's not about AD, it's about DeRozan. And DeRozan belongs there. And the reality is, you look at this team, they have the bench is incredibly deep. They have the type of athletic wings that you need to match up with some of these tougher teams. They're very young. They're very energetic. There is a lot different about the Toronto Raptors this year than we've seen in prior years. They just play, even with the same players on it, they play the game a whole lot differently. There's full buy-in to KC's system. I've seen something incredibly different in this team than I've seen in the past. And I think if they carry over this momentum in the style of play that they've had, I think there's no doubt that they can go to the finals. The one thing you worry about with them is what you guys mentioned, which is it can certainly revert back to isolation basketball for them at times. But I will say this, I've been surprised how little that's happened to them this year. And even recently, with the way they've been, they've been having big, losing big leads or certainly being down in games early, that's been more of an indictment of tired defense than it has been not sharing the basketball. It's a different kind of offensive team. And again, I'm going to tell you guys, when you look at analytics and numbers, one of the biggest determinant of playoff success when it comes to regular season numbers for teams is point differential. Right now, the Toronto Raptors are second in the league behind the Houston Rockets in point differential. That's the kind of dominant season they've had.
It's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is even. Text even to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword's even to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
We're talking with Brian Geltzeiler here on SiriusXM and NBA TV. This is the Bernstein McKnight Show on 670 The Score. Brian, I want to go back to Cleveland a little bit, because right now, I believe if I'm reading this right, they have the 7th pick from the Nets. They have reshaped their roster on the fly this season. They are horrendous defensively, but they still have LeBron James. I wonder if you're kind of on my... I feel that they could remake yet again the roster around LeBron, assuming he stays, and I wonder what you think the prospects for them are after this postseason, however it shapes out, is done.
Well, I think part of the problem that the Cleveland's going to have in keeping LeBron James, and the answer to your question is yes. If they keep James, they certainly could reshape this entire team. They certainly could. I mean, Dan Gilbert's willing to spend the money. There's enough assets there, and now that they've gotten younger, they can certainly figure out a way to do that. I'm just not all that convinced LeBron's going to stay. I think some of the disconnect that you have here, and when you look at what went on with regarding the Kyrie Irving trade, how little input LeBron had into who and what was being brought in and the whole process. And now listen, he had so much faith in David Griffin. And LeBron understood that even if it wasn't necessarily a move he agreed with, he had a lot of trust that Griffin knew what he was doing. With Kobe Altman, it is back to square one. That trust doesn't necessarily exist. And then you have the other situation with the fact that Dan Gilbert's tired of being told what to do by LeBron. And they feel like LeBron, for as great as LeBron is on the court, when it comes to LeBron, you know, pushing them on personnel decisions, that they've kind of run them into a dead end with certain things. Listen, it was LeBron's idea to pay J.R. Smith. It was LeBron's idea to pay Tristan Thompson. You know, these are contracts that aren't working for them right now, and contracts that are hamstringing them from making other moves. So I look at the situation there. Now you get Ty Lue's illness factoring in. And listen, he could come back in a week. I mean, they're saying it's possible, but that also could be a hopeful time frame for what happens with Lue here. There's a lot of writing on the wall for that. The Cleveland situation, after LeBron's been back here now for 4 years, isn't exactly the way he dreamed it up to be after 4 years. And I certainly could see him deciding to go to another location. I think, obviously, the Lakers is what everybody talks about. And I do think that the biggest determinant in LeBron James potentially either returning to the Cavs or going somewhere else is going to be what Paul George does in OKC. Because if Paul George decides to go to L.A., I could see LeBron going with him. If Paul George decides to stay in OKC, you could certainly see LeBron do a variety of things, which is A, opt into the last year of his deal and stay with the Cavs for one more year, or B, sign one of those two-year deals with a one-year opt-out with another team, hence a Philadelphia, stay in the East, try to go to the finals with them, and then sit back and look at the situation going forward if you would want to stay there or find another star to partner with to go somewhere else. So, listen, for the Cavs, I think it's going to be an uphill battle to keep LeBron James. The fact that this relationship with him and Dan Gilbert has kind of unwound in the way that it does, I don't think bodes well for them.
All right, Brian, we got about 40 seconds here to take a quick look at the West. Trailblazers have won 13 in a row. We should probably include Damian Lillard in that second tier or 1A MVP discussion. Jazz have won 9 in a row. How do you see this shaking out down the stretch?
Well, I think the one team that's out of the picture right now that's still got a chance to crawl back in is the LA Clippers. Stick a fork in Denver. Denver, they're going into a 7-game road trip here, and one of the games they desperately needed was the other night in Memphis. They didn't get it. Last night they got beaten overtime by the Miami Heat, so they're finished there. I actually think the Clippers have a chance to climb in, but when you look at how well the Jazz have played, how well the Blazers have played, even the Timberwolves are keeping their head above water in the absence of Jimmy Butler, I kind of think the 8 that you have there in the West is the 8 that you're going to see. The only question becomes what order, because the one thing I'll tell you is that Golden State and Houston can say whatever they want. The two teams they don't want to see at all in the first round are San Antonio and OKC, and with the way these standings are as tight as they are, that certainly is something that could happen to one of those teams. I will promise you this, guys, we're not going to see Golden State win 15 in a row in the playoffs again. That will not be happening. The West is way too competitive.
Kelsey, always great. Thanks for your time, man.
My pleasure, guys. Talk to you soon.
That is Brian Geltzeiler at Hoops Critic on Twitter, SiriusXM. You see him on NBA TV. If you are just joining us and if you weren't with us yesterday, we got something new that is on the Bernstein and McKnight show. It is nothing like High Noon.
No, absolutely not. You won't even recognize it.
It's nothing like Secondhand News.
Not
it's
at all.
It's nothing like the second half. It's nothing like In Other News. It is completely different and original.
We've reinvented the wheel.
And it's called the Midday Midway. So we'll hit the midway next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.